extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer. Mo Adu is here. How did we get on Mo's schedule? That is the ultimate mystery as Copa America rolls on to the final. And Mo's back in action this weekend for an MLS Cup rematch between the Crew and LAFC. Big show coming for you. We'll hit all the big topics with Mo, talk to DeAndre Yedlin, and might even have a special guest for you down the line. That's still TBD at this fine hour on July 11th. Mo, what's up, man? I'm back from vacation. I'm glad it's with you.
You got to just rub it in my face that you're coming back from vacation.
Oh,
okay.
Did I say that? Oh, my bad. My bad.
Where'd you go? Where were you?
I went to Kansas City. So, look, it wasn't exactly, you know, we weren't lounging on beach chairs, sipping daiquiris or anything like that. But sometimes you got to see the family, man. Get the old cup filled back up, so to speak.
We're at that age now, Wiebe, where you just use the word vacation, but that could fill the void of so many different things. But we just kind of categorize it as a vacation. So I can appreciate that, man. I'm glad you got some time to enjoy life again and take a break from everything else, because you're also a busy man.
You sound a little bit rueful there. Tell us how the last month has gone for you. I mean, Fox Sports now coming back to the MLS season pass family, but you've been on it.
Yeah, it's been fun, man. These tournaments, international tournaments, are always fun. It's obviously a grind, day-to-day work, but the tournaments have been enjoyable, been some really good football that we've been able to enjoy, seeing some veteran players, maybe for the last time in international play, or at least in a tournament-type setting. Guys like, I mean, I can rule them out because who knows? They might defy whatever I have in my head. But guys like Ronaldo and Toni Kroos obviously calls it quits. And then you see some emerging talents and players that are just using this platform to really showcase themselves, like Lamine Yamal and what he's doing with Spain. And then go to Copa America, Argentina, another final. Colombia, the rebirth of James, and just that whole collection of teams. It's been fun, man. I've enjoyed it. If you're a fan of this beautiful game, this has been a hell of a summer to be a part of and witness.
Euro final or Copa America final? If I could send you to one, which one are you going to?
Oh.
Spain, England, pretty good, pretty good. Argentina, Colombia in Miami, absolute fiesta, insanity. Like, I don't know if Miami as a city is going to survive that match.
Damn, that's a good question. You know what? I'd have to reach out to a friend or something who has a private jet, and I'm going to try to make it happen. I'm going to try to make it happen at both, man. I'm going to try to be at both of them, because even if I got to just be at the first half of one and then maybe get there by halftime or something for the second one, I don't know how that's a coin toss, because both games are going to be incredible for different reasons, right? England thinks it's coming home and they haven't been at their best, but they found a way to get to yet another final. Gareth Southgate has found a way to get his team, whether you like him, you don't like him, he's taken this English team to, you know, back-to-back Euro finals. So that's incredible. Argentina looking to repeat as champions. This is Di Maria's last Copa America, probably Messi's last Copa America. The storylines are just written for both games, and damn, that's a good. What are you choosing?
I mean, I'm going on the private jet with you. I don't know what – I don't have to choose. If you got a private jet, I pose the question. I'm running – I'm like in your shadow. I'm like, I'm coming too, right, guys? Like, you going to bring me? I would take Copa America just because I think the moment for Messi and also the moment for Colombia really speaks to me as a fan of the game in this side of the hemisphere. I just think being in Miami for that match, the stars, the people, the culture, and that's not to speak ill of – England or Spain or what's going to go down in Germany in that final, because it's going to be absolutely spectacular. But I'm an Americas guy, Mo. I'm about this region, so that's where I'll be sticking with it. But I'll be watching, of course, the other game in the pregame before we hit the stadium. Now, you have a little bit of a heritage and legacy that you are going to be a part of here as well. MLS Cup rematch at the weekend. God, I mean, LAFC Columbus, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on Apple TV, MLS season pass. You guys got the prime gig, huh? This is the number one game by far. I think Taylor Twellman's off playing golf somewhere this weekend, the celebrity tournament. So that's good timing, huh?
This is going to be fun, man. This is, as you mentioned, MLS Cup rematch. Two teams that are in incredible form and two managers that I have so much love for and respect for. Steve Cherundolo, LAFC, former teammate of mine with the national team. And to see the way that he's just hit the ground running ever since he's taken over as a full-time manager has been incredible. And as from a personal level, as I said, I'm really excited and happy for him. And then Wilfred Nancy, I've gotten to know him over the last couple of years, and his body of work speaks for itself. But I've always been so impressed with just how clear he is on, one, who he is as a manager, but then just his expectations of what he expects from his players. And to see how that translated so quickly in year one when he took over for the Crew last season, that's been incredible. But yeah, a rematch, two teams that are in great form. LAFC, they haven't lost at home. They're unbeaten in like 10 games. You have your stars, of course, your Danny Buongas. Mateus Boguch has emerged as a star this season. Kai Kamara showing that he's still got the juice. And then for Columbus, same thing. You know, they have a trio of stars in Cucho and Diego Rossi, Darlington Nagbe wearing the armband and just looking like he's just never, ever going to age. But Weeby, the thing that stands out to me about these two teams is we celebrate how good they are with the ball. We celebrate how good they are at creating chances, scoring goals, entertaining the fans. But both teams are incredible defensively as well. And
no, I think like, I agree, man. I agree.
To me, this is where they have an edge over your other teams that are in the Supporters Shield race, for example. But this game to me is going to be – it's must-see TV. It's going to be an incredible atmosphere at BMO Stadium yet again, and I just can't wait, man.
So I always think about that when we see teams that play beautiful soccer, and I think you can go back to a lot of teams over the years. Yes, to play beautiful soccer, you need the ball, but – those teams win the ball back quicker and in better spots than anybody else. I mean, it's how you play that way. And I don't think the Crew get enough credit for the repress and the aggression that they show and the way that they say, okay, well, we're going to take this real estate from you. And once we do, we're going to keep it. Like, good luck getting out of your own end. And Wilfred has talked about over the last month, like, it's not, what he wants to see from his team more is not, hey, more slick passing sequences, more like, you know, bing, bing, bing counterattacks. Does he want that? Yeah, sure. What he wants most is like straight up aggression. He wants to bully people.
Yeah.
And that to me is such a beautiful thing to watch, a team that can both sort of like show you the beautiful side with the brush strokes and the beautiful passing and the movement and the finishing and these incredible star attacking players, but also when they lose the ball and want to punch you upside the head. Like that is beauty to me.
Oh, for sure. And to me, that also just speaks to evolution. Like, what we saw from Columbus last year, incredible. And they go on to win MLS Cup. But Wilfred Nancy knows himself that, okay, now we have to find a way to add a little bit more to our game. How can we evolve and become an even more well-rounded team? And to your point about being a team that's kind of multifaceted in the way they go about their game, it's also the ability to defend with the ball, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's, yeah, you win the ball quickly in counter-pressing and you're aggressive in the way that you press to win the ball back in more favorable positions on the pitch. But I say defending with the ball, meaning, and I don't mean rest defending, I mean literally defending with the ball, meaning that you're almost not, you don't have to defend because you have possession. The way that you're able to tire out a team through passing sequences of dragging players in different positions to create advantages, but just the longer that you have with the ball and the other team is chasing shadows, it kind of gives you an advantage because now when they do win the ball back, they're in a rush. Maybe they're tired. Players don't want to make the runs in behind because they've been chasing for so long. So your time that you have to defend is now shortened a little bit. So listen, I think these are two incredibly thoughtful managers, different identities in the way that their teams go about the game, but equally appealing from an aesthetic standpoint for a fan and just really fun teams to watch.
I think it's interesting in this sort of point of evolution. Like, you know, the Crew were great at so many of these things last year, but there's always another level you can reach, and I think they're reaching that level. The flip side for LAFC is that they were amazing at transition play and a really good team in terms of putting teams under pressure, whether it's with a high press and going direct to goal or pressing you out of more of a mid block. But now they're adding possession. And I think Cherundolo recognizes that like, to your point, defending with the ball, especially late in games and with leads. Like, if they have the ball, their rest defense, they're, you can't hit them, you can't return the counter, you can't get set pieces against them, you can't trouble them, and that added tool in their bag is just letting them close down games. And,
sure.
and also break you down.
Yeah, LAFC is funny, right? Because if you just think back to their initial season, first few seasons under Bob, they were a team that was more possession-based, and then they could strike you in transition a little bit more. And then Steve Trenilo comes, and there's a little bit of a tilt, and they become a little bit more reliant on – I think for – it's all about how you find that balance, right? You show your cards in terms of what you exceed at, what you excel at, what your kind of superhero power is. And for LAFC, for sure, it's transition moments because you have guys like Danny Buonga. You have guys like Kike Oliveira, who's not even here right now because he was with Uruguay during Copa America. You have guys like Mateus Bogus who can stretch the game for you, who are good at running when they're spacing behind, who are good at allowing those balls to be played into space from the likes of Tillman, Atsuesta, Ilya Sanchez. But now, how do you become a team that's a little bit more balanced? If a team is sitting in a low block, well, there's no space to run in behind. How do you still find ways to create chances? How can you kill a game off? The ability to win 1-0 games, 2-0 games, 2-1 games, like small margin games. Sometimes it comes from just game management, and a lot of that can be done by just being a team that's more savvy and capable with just keeping possession of the ball.
Who do you think wins the possession battle in this game? And I guess when I say wins, I often regret that in terms of possession battle because – that's not determinant to the result at all. And oftentimes teams would say, actually, we don't want to win that possession battle. We would rather you have the ball. We think we're more dangerous when you have the ball. Who do you think will dominate this game with the ball?
LAFC at home is a different beast, man. There's a reason
they've added it. They certainly have.
Yeah. There's a reason why they haven't been beat at BMO Stadium. And so, listen, I wouldn't be surprised if Columbus shades them in terms of actual amount of time on the ball. But I think both of these teams have shown a level of efficiency when they have possession. So if it is for large spells, if it's not, LAFC just finding their moments to take advantage of situations, to create 1v1s in wide areas for Buonga, to earn set pieces so that Kai Kamara can come and dunk on somebody. If it's Columbus being able to create overloads in wide areas, get runners off the ball, Cucho dropping into the pocket, I think there's going to be a pretty free-flowing element to this game. And I would say Columbus probably shades it just slightly, maybe in terms of actual, when you look at the numbers of possession. But I don't know if that'll be the clearest indicator of how this game shapes up.
I agree. I think like 55% Columbus, 45% LAFC, but that's not going to be a sit deep encounter LAFC. I don't think you can do that against Columbus effectively, and I certainly don't think Steve Cherundolo and this team will want to do that at home. I think back to a goal that they scored against the Rapids like 2 weeks ago maybe that really exemplified for me like this change for LAFC, and Colorado tried to come out and really press them. And like get on top of them, win the ball high. And LAFC just played through them. And in playing through them quickly, bing, 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 all of a sudden the ball's in behind for Bogus. Or no, it was Buonga on the right side. And he crossed over for Bogus, making a run in the middle. So like they can combine this idea of like, hey, we can possess the ball maybe more efficiently than we did last year while also hitting you on the break. What have you thought of Bogus, by the way? Like, have you been surprised? Yeah, about this level of production, this level of, I hesitate to say dominance, but man, it's getting to the point recently. The form is dominant.
I don't know what other word you would use for it. I mean, what are his numbers this year? Like 8 goals, I think, and 6 assists.
Like 12.
Crazy. 12 goals. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm underselling this guy. 12. Yeah. I think it's like 12 and 6. But so I remember watching him last year and I thought, ooh, I like this player. And he was playing more of a number 8. At times he played on the wing, but I liked him as a number 8. Just clean on the ball, can advance the ball through the dribble. He can play a final pass, but I thought he just looked like more of a guy who was just really comfortable getting the ball in tight spaces and could advance the ball as a number 8. I give him credit. I give him a tremendous amount of credit. I thought we would see a second-year bump. I didn't see this kind of bump coming. And also, I didn't see a second-year bump coming from playing out of position, playing a false 9 at times.
Is he out of position anymore? I mean, it's he played the 8 last night in the Open Cup and he scored a goal. He played on the wing. He has been super productive there. The false 9 was an amazing sort of experiment for Steve Cherundolo. Mo, I would argue that like physically he's got a ton of gifts, But the tactical mental side of the game, for him to play effectively in all of those spots, I mean, that speaks the world of his ability and his sort of like innate understanding of what a game needs and his ability to deliver on it.
So I'm going to give you a comparison, but now hear me out, man. I'm not making a direct comparison, but as my brain's rattling right now, I'm trying to think of who I think is – I'm just going to throw a name out there, right? What I think about Mateusz Bogusz is I think he's a good footballer, right? Does he have to your point, does he have maybe a natural position? He's shown that he can play a variety of positions. To me, it's kind of like – I look at him kind of like Kai Havertz. I think Kai Havertz is just a pure footballer. And is his best position at number 9? Is his best position at number 10? Is his best position on the wing? Is it as an 8? I don't know. I want this guy on the pitch because he can offer things from a variety of different ways. Never looks really flustered. And he handles the role that he's put in. He handles them well. You saw that at Chelsea. You're seeing it now at Arsenal. And again, I'm not making a direct comparison.
Sure, sure. Qualifiers are in here. He's special.
But I look at Mateusz Bogusz, and he's done that for LAFC this year. He initially was just filling a gap as a number 9, but to your point, he's kind of made it his own. Plays it in a different way than your typical number 9s, and even your typical false 9s. He just plays it differently. But then he comfortably slots in on the left, comfortably slots in on the right, drops into number 8, and doesn't look out of place. And let me not even say doesn't look out of place, contributes to the number 1 team in the West. One of the teams that's competing for a supporters shield, after Denny Bawanga, and maybe he's top 3 in this team in terms of guys that you need to be playing on a week to week basis.
It's going to be difficult for Steve Cherundolo. I mean, the good kind of difficult. When Olivier Giroud rolls in here very soon, the transfer window opens in a week. When Kiki Oliveira comes back from Copa America, and you have another guy who can play on the wing and can threaten him behind in the same way that Bawanga does, though we're still waiting for the final product from Kiki. I mean, this is a great game. MLS Cup rematch, Saturday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. Right at the back end of that, the wrap-up on MLS Season Pass. Watch Mo. Keith the Mo will guide you through it. Then we'll give you all the highlights and everything else. I love that you said the shield race. I want to dive into that with you real quick. Who's going to win this thing? I'm going to give you a choice of the 3 favorites right now. FC Cincinnati on top. We'll chat with DeAndre Yedlin in just a second about that. Of course, Inter Miami right there, and then LAFC. Who would you take from that trio?
I'm leaning towards LAFC, and people will probably look at me with a side eye like, you're not picking Miami.
Even with the big gap, Mo. I mean, we're talking at this point, we're a 4-point gap between the big boys at the top. I know they got a game in hand or maybe 2, depending on the team here, but that's a gap.
But I think they do have, I want to say 2 games in hand, if I'm not mistaken. Listen, they're in incredible form. You just mentioned so casually a player that they're adding coming soon. I'm looking at it now. So they have 1 game in hand on Cincy. So that'd be, if they win their game in hand, it'd just be a 2-point gap. They have a serial winner in Olivier Giroud coming in. Kike Oliveira comes to add another piece in the attack going forward. Aaron Long is fit now, and I think he's really helped to stabilize that back line. Where I think that they're better than the 2 teams potentially above them, Cincinnati lost. They've shown that they can win without their center backs, but I don't know if that's sustainable over the course of the remainder of the season or however long these players will be out. Miami, their back line has always been kind of their, I don't want to say Achilles heel, but the area where everyone feels like they still need to find a little bit more consistency and stability. Obviously, we know they have game changers going forward. And then the other part is, I don't know how long these guys are going to be fit. I don't know if Messi's going to come back from Copa America at the same level that he was at before. But I do know all the pieces that are playing currently for LAFC, the only pieces that are coming back are just going to take the help to elevate them. And if they don't, if those players come back and they're not, if Giroud comes in and maybe he doesn't hit the ground running, which would be a surprise to me, LAFC will be fine. If Kiki Oliveira comes back and he needs a couple games to get back to his level, they'll be fine. So I look at LAFC and I think they're a machine. They know what it takes to cross that finish line. They've been there before. But I still got a lot of love for both Cincinnati and Miami. It's going to be a fun race, man. This is, I think, one of the more exciting seasons in terms of the supporter shield race.
I mean, you're speaking my language, man. I think it's been a month and a half or so that I've been sitting on our shows on MLS Season Pass yelling in production meetings, guys, this is the best shield race of all time. There is a possibility that 6 teams could be in this thing. I see your LAFC. I understand your LAFC. Olivier Giroud has not, I mean, somehow has not gotten enough pub coming into this team with all the gifts that he has, and I think complimentary gifts to what LAFC does. I'm still taking Cincinnati.
Oh.
I'm taking Cincinnati off a 6-1 beatdown of Miami. I know that Miami was a little bit of disarray for them because of all the missing players, because Busquets is playing on the back line, but that's their reality, man. It's their reality. They've been finding a way to get through it, and so is Cincinnati, but I'm going to bet on Lucho. I'm going to bet on Pat Noonan. I'm going to bet on this group of veterans finding a way to get it done, and I said that a month ago, and if I walked away from it now, it would just be some Benedict Arnold stuff, and I got to stick with a take. I like to waffle sometimes, Mo, but this time I'm not going to waffle. I'm sticking with my boys.
There's no, it's not, I don't think it's a bad take, if I'm being honest with you, and the fact that they've done it. They've walked this path, right? To me, that's sometimes is the hardest part is when you've never done something, right? You don't know the grind that, or the significance of this final stretch or this little mid stretch or how you navigate this or how you navigate that. Cincinnati has a direct reference point. So that in itself could be beneficial for them. I just wonder about how sustainable it is with Matt Miazga missing.
If the magic runs out, I feel you. And look, Miles Robinson's going to be gone for the Olympics, which we'll chat about in just a little bit. But he is going to be there through that Chicago game. So you've got, I believe, 3 more games with him there before he misses one against the Red Bulls on the road. And then he'll miss Leagues Cup. But hey, Supporter Shield's not won during Leagues Cup. All right, take a dark horse. How about that? Crew, Galaxy, RSL. Because if I'm saying it's a 6-horse race, we got to give those teams respect. Which one of those three do you think could make the best run, if not win it?
I'd say the crew. You say the crew, Galaxy, and RSL. Ooh, RSL's been fun this year. Galaxy have been fun this year. I would say the crew. I mean, they're MLS Cup champions. They have one of the best managers, if not the best manager in the league. They are in form. I think it's 8 wins out of their last 9 games. They also have quite a few games in hand. Maybe they have 2 on Cincinnati.
Yeah, they've got 2 on Cincinnati and 3 on Miami.
And they know how to win games, man. They know how to win games in narrow margins. They have the best defense. Again, we were talking about this earlier, right? We talk about them from how beautiful their football is and how many goals they score. But they have the best defensive record in the league. They've conceded the least amount of goals. They have the best goal differential in the league, right? So I look at them, and if anyone from the top 6 or from 4 to 6 is going to sneak into that top 3, I would probably bet on Columbus.
I think it's a good bet. I would see that, and I don't know if raise you, but match you RSL just in terms of their late schedule. I think the schedule down the stretch post Leagues Cup is super home heavy for RSL, and it's those little advantages down the line that can get you over the line. I'm also betting on RSL to make some moves. I think they'll go out and sign another number 10. I think they'll open up that DP spot and move Matt Crooks off of the DP list, so to speak. So I think that they've got every chance in the world, and I just feel like Pablo always finds a way to get his guys going, get them ramped up, get them believing in themselves, and I think there's some sort of value to just feeling like an underdog in these races and having that little intrinsic sort of motivation of like, yeah, look, we're not the team that everybody's going to talk about, but we're going to be the team at the end of the line that finds a way, and plus seeding is going to matter when it comes to the MLS Cup playoffs. Speaking of coaches, I mean, I love what Pablo's done this year. I'm not sure he would be my coach of the year, though he'd be in the discussion. Who would your vote go to right now?
I'm a big Wilfred Nancy guy. I got a lot of love for what Pat Noonan is doing, Steve Trenal is doing as well.
When you start like that, there's a butt coming.
Yeah, there is a butt coming. Every team that's in the conversation for Supporters Shield, you got to give love to their manager, right? Because they've obviously done something to maintain a level of consistency where they're in that conversation to win Supporters Shield. But for whatever reason, Weeby, whenever we have these chats, a certain guy seems to get the raw end of the deal more times than not. For whatever reason, that's Tata Martino. So I bring up Tata Martino. You probably first think like, what the hell? Why should we talk about the guy?
I'm thinking that this man has the least raw deal in he's got Lionel Messi, Mo.
Exactly.
Luis Suarez. He's got Sergio Busquets and Jordi Alba, and then a stacked up squad behind him.
So does he even need to coach, right? Like, why? How is he in contention?
Lounge on the bench.
Being a coach. I've never been a coach, but I've had a few different coaches. Being a coach to me is not only about the X's and O's. It's also about managing personalities. So when you bring 4 of the of global superstars, you also got to manage personalities. Okay, no big deal. But now when those players leave, you still got to find ways to get results. Messi's been gone. Suarez has been gone for Copa America. And this Inter Miami team, by the way, they've also been riddled with injuries. Again, I don't want to make excuses for them because they also have one of the deepest and best rosters.
You don't got to make excuses on that. They have been crushed by injuries.
But they have been crushed with injuries. And yet, they're still finding ways to get results. So I think it's crazy of me to just keep looking past Tata and saying, my man, you've done a hell of a job with, obviously with a stacked team, but you've done a hell of a job in managing this group, in figuring out ways to shift things slightly, to put people in more favorable positions, to better the group. And then also you've been able to find ways to get results without your superstars. So
yeah, I like it. The phrase I would use with Tata and with this sort of situation that he's been in is active management. It's not just been set it and forget it. You see sometimes teams who succeed in MLS, who have this incredible season, who win the Shield, and inevitably coaches win Coach of the Year. You don't have that many injuries. You don't have any things to change and chop. And that doesn't take away from the accomplishment, but like every single match, Tata has innumerable decisions to make right now. Who's available to play? How does he integrate players back into the lineup? And within all of that, there's no room for error. Like, nobody's going to accept because they have injuries or that Messi's not there or Suarez is not there that it's okay for Miami to lose a game, that it's okay for Miami not to be in the Shield hunt, that it's okay for Miami to show weakness. Like, that, nobody's giving them the excuse. Nobody's giving them the benefit of the doubt. So, to me, it's active management, and I think it's incredible how he got this team to respond without Messi and Suarez. I mean, remember, they lost to Atlanta, and they tied St. Louis in Messi and Suarez's final two games before Copa. Mm-hmm. Then they rolled off four straight wins. Were the margins tight? Yes. Does it matter? No. And the Cincinnati blip is there, but they're still right there in the Shield race. I would apply active management to Pat Noonan as well, and that's my pick right now. I thought he was a coach of the year last year. I think he's the coach of the year this year as well. Six new guys in the starting lineup for a Shield-winning team. They've had their share of injuries as well with the center backs. And that staff, because I don't want to take it, I don't want to make it like a Tata Pat binary. Their staffs play a huge role in this as well. The ability to get Luca Orsano settled, to get Pavel Buka settled, and we're now seeing the best of him, to turn Yuya Kubo from a guy who was like, okay, does he have final product, into one of the more productive sort of role players in the league. Like, there are all these little mini stories within both these teams that just speak to, okay, that's a staff that, one, gets it from a collective sense, but really gets it from an individual sense as well. Whether it's man management, whether it's just helping players improve, whether it's just making players believe in themselves. Like, all these things that go into being a great coach, both these guys have it in spades. And, oh, by the way, there's like five other guys we could talk about right now too.
The other part to that is just like the level of, when you talk about teams being consistent, it's also, that's a reflection of the manager. To be able to do this in a one-off, it's like, oh, okay, he found the juice in that one season and things, everything just aligned, everything just clicked. But I agree with you from Pat Noonan's standpoint. It's like, he's running it back. It's not a fluke. This is not just a one-off occasion where we had a superstar where Brandon Vasquez went crazy and all of a sudden we were able to just turn it on. Lucho went crazy. No, like, he's finding ways to replace big pieces that have been lost, integrate new pieces, keep a group motivated. Right, keep a group hungry, keep players who aren't playing hungry. So listen, there's a lot of good candidates this season. It's not, to me, I don't know if there's a clear front runner, which to me reflects where this league is at this season. I don't think there's a clear front runner for Coach of the Year. Maybe I'm off in that, but that's just my thoughts. And to me, that's also kind of consistent with where the Supporter Shield race is.
Great. Shield, coach, MVP. Like, this is what we want, right? Like, I want a league where it's all up for grabs until the last 3-4 weeks of the season. That everybody is just sort of like scratching and clawing for position, for glory, for the trophy, for that individual award, for everything. Like, that's what we want. Competition over the course of the whole season. But inevitably, some guys won't get that call. Some guys just, narratives will get into play. Like, results won't quite be the same. If you don't win the Shield, it's hard to be Coach of the Year. So who's a manager that won't win but has been very, very good and deserves some flowers?
I'd say Chris Armas, because I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I saw this season coming from them. I know Colorado were ambitious this year and went out and signed the likes of Mihailovic and brought back, they brought back Mihailovic and you know, added some pieces that were exciting, brought Zach Seffin back from Europe as well. But you still kind of, when you looked at the upper echelon of this league, you kind of felt like, maybe they need a couple years before this really settles, or they need a couple more pieces to really complement these guys, or they need a bigger piece to kind of be the focal point for these guys to now just assume roles within this team. But I've been impressed with Chris Armas and the Rapids because of the progression. They started off the season well, but individual players maybe weren't hitting their heights. And so sometimes a way to assess a manager is how a player progresses. So you look at a couple individuals on their team, Navajo, for example. You look at Cole Bassett and the leaps that he's taken. You look at Mihailovic. He came in and was still trying to find his feet, trying to figure out the best position to be in for him to be successful. But now you've all seen them, or you've seen all three of them just raise their game. To me, that's a reflection of the coach figuring out a system that suits these players, that puts them in positions to succeed. Cole Bassett playing as a number eight, a little bit deeper where he can make his late runs into the box. I think his timing is really good. So all these things that Chris Armas has been able to tinker with to not only have his team seventh in the Supporter Shield race, but then also to also see the individual progression of players throughout the course of the season, he gets a nod and he gets some love for me, man.
I completely agree. I think there's an element too of just rebuilding like a psyche at a club. For Chris, I mean, Colorado were the second worst team in the entire league last year. They had 27 points the entire season. And to walk into that locker room and get guys to believe that they can get results and get guys to sort of leave the demons of the past behind, because there is a lot of carryover. I know they made big moves, but it's not like you can change out an entire team. Like, I give him huge credit in that sense. And I give a ton of credit to Dean Smith on the other side, who would be my pick from the other conference, in just simplifying things. You know, and saying, hey, who are the guys that want to be here? Like, if this is not where you want to be, well, then let's make a decision here. Let's move you on. Let's not be nostalgic. Let's not say, oh, well, we have to hold on to you because you're a DP. Oh, well, we don't have, no. Like, let's rip it down to the studs in terms of tactics, in terms of personnel, and go back to basics. And look, the basics have taken Charlotte to sixth in the Eastern Conference. I think they're unlucky, honestly, with some of their finishing, not to be better because that defense has been so good. But speaking of young players and players stepping up, I mean, both center backs, Milanda, who just signed a contract extension today, and Privet have been magnificent. I don't think Christian Kalina was at his best last year. He has been at his best this year. Both fullbacks have leveled up for them as well. Ashley Westwood, magnificent addition. And then to get a guy like Patrick Agyeman to believe that he can be a guy who can lead a line. I don't think we've seen it all the time from Big Pat. I freaking love the dude. I'm Agyeman Hive till I die, Aji Gang. But, you know, there is room to improve for this team. I look around at the fifth, sixth and down in both conferences and say, okay, well, who can make a huge move in the summer and turn themselves into an MLS Cup contender? And it might be a stretch to say that Charlotte's that team. But with the open DP spots, with the ambition that they've shown, with Karol Swiderski potentially coming back and maybe another addition, high-end addition coming in, I think they can be that team. I think they could be a team that through the second half of the year with more attacking firepower and, what, the second-best defense in the Eastern Conference, second-best defense in the league overall. I don't want to get them too excited in the Queen City, but I think it could happen if they deliver on the ambition and get the right DP signings into this team.
Well,
you're at a loss for words. I understand. Who's the team for you that needs that, that could do that?
Well, I don't know if this team is just one piece away, but it's one of the biggest markets and one of the most attractive markets in this league and maybe in this country when you talk about sports, and that's Atlanta, right? They just sold two of their DPs. So they got some money. They had money before, but now they got some money.
Money has, to be fair to Atlanta, money has never been the obstacle here. But
no problem. Money ain't a thing.
They got $45 million. So that seems like a decent amount.
And we were just talking about Copa America earlier. To me, the MVP of that tournament, if you're at this moment, is James Rodriguez. James Rodriguez currently 32 years old, I believe. Playing in Brazil. Well, not really playing in Brazil. He's sitting in Brazil. But he's shown during this tournament, this guy still got it. He's still a dead ball specialist. He's still that creative spark. He can create goals. His passing range is incredible. He's been wearing the armband so for Colombia for a while now. So there's the leadership quality as well. I can only imagine, dare I dream, if you're an Atlanta United fan.
Dare you.
Dare I dream what this team could look like with a number nine, a proper number nine, and James Rodriguez pulling the strings as your number 10. Just saying.
His birthday is July 12th, so maybe a nice little birthday present. Just a little Atlanta United comes sniffing around, and emissary says, we think the next 3 years of your life, your career, can go down in Atlanta, and God knows those Colombian fans will follow.
They will love him. They will
Bank of America him. Was, I mean, amazing last night. I mean, maybe not so amazing at the end as some of those scenes went down, but boy, those Colombian fans made it an absolute party, packed it to the gills. I like that dream. I like that dream. Right now, Atlanta, the rumors, reports, Tom Bogert's scoopage is that they're going after Atalanta number 10, a Russian international who's in like the Garth Lagerway age profile range, like late 20s, has been productive. But I mean, look,
you know what I'm saying?
As a narrative guy, give me James.
If it's not Atlanta, I think there's plenty of teams that James could thrive for. Orlando could do with a James in their team as well. You know, I think there's quite a few teams in this league who could benefit from a guy who's I mean, just, you watch him play. Just give him the keys and let this man drive that thing. Because, yeah, a lot of teams could benefit from him in this league. I just think he's a player that needs to be – we would love to see in this league.
I agree. And I think MLS would be a good place for him. If you look around in the league at sort of the profiles of number 10s and the way that teams sort of hand the keys to number 10s in this league, look, would he be productive? Yes. He would absolutely be productive. Who do you think Atlanta should get as a manager? Like sometimes maybe we're putting the cart before the horse. I don't know. It seems like they're more on the, hey, let's get the players and the manager can manage the right guys. You spent a good year in Atlanta covering that team. What's the right kind of manager for Atlanta United?
I mean, the right kind of manager first and foremost is someone who recognizes that the expectation is to win. Like I know you'd go through a rebuild. And so at times it almost seems like the goalposts get moved in terms of what's priority number one. Excuse me, for a market and a team like and Atlanta, the ambition that they have and the fans have and the expectation that they have since day one is that this team's going to be a winner. So to me, it's a manager who can come in and first and foremost get results. But then beyond that, listen, they've invested quite a bit of money in their academy. So being able to facilitate that progression from the academy system into the first team, integrate young players, you imagine that they're going to go out and spend money, get some DPs in there. So knowing how to, first and foremost, integrate the right kind of profile DP into your team. But then also just knowing, again, I think knowing that market, knowing how to play a brand of football that's going to be appeasing to these fans. Their expectations are here. When you come in and you hit the ground running with Tata and you have the pace and just the high energy of guys like Almirón and Joseph Martinez. And so those are the heydays and days that you dream of having again. It doesn't necessarily have to be in that exact mold, but being at the Benz, it's a special place.
I think the vibe, there's like the vibe aspect of it, right?
For sure.
Like we're the aggressor. We're the dominant team. Like
teams should hate
on your feet. Yeah.
Teams should hate coming into the Benz because the Benz are going to deliver. They're going to deliver no matter what. Like, that place is crazy. But the on-field production, like, these teams should come in there and be like, oh, damn, it's going to be – I know it's going to be a grind in terms of how we have to play defensively. We're going to be chasing shadows. Like, these guys are going to do X, Y, and Z. There should be an identifiable style of play, which, again, to me, should be reflective of what that fan base is. But, yeah, I just – first and foremost, they got to get back to being a team that wins consistently, because that's what the fans expect, man. And so it seems so simple for sure.
Yeah.
But this is a club who I don't think they'll be short of suitors.
No,
they'll be short of candidates and people that want to come and take this job.
Super attractive, ton of resources. And I think the idea of a long-term project is what I would be trying to sell if I was a manager coming in. Of not like, hey, I'm coming in for a year or two, Tata style, we're going to win and I might roll out. More like, hey, I'm coming in to settle things down, to get the best out of these DPs you're signing, to continue the development of young players, because we have seen that from Atlanta United. and get us back to a stable winning organization. Like, that's where Atlanta United should be, where they need to be. So Garth is, and Carlos are going to go sign these DPs. They're going to be guys that should be productive for at least three to four years. If you think of the Garth model in, you know, whether it be in RSL way back in the day, a little bit of a different time in MLS history, but maybe more on the Seattle model, where it's like, we're going to get Rui Diaz, we're going to get Ladero. You are going to have centerpieces who are best in class in this league based on talent, based on production for the next 4 years. Can you get the most out of those DPs? Can you put the right pieces around them? Can you create a culture that means we expect to win every game at home, no doubt about it, and should have the ability to win as many games as possible on the road? We want to be a team in the top two or three in our conference every year. We want to win MLS Cups. Like, they need a coach that's committing to coming for 4-5 years. Not like a quick project. But we'll see who they find. I'm certain that there are those candidates out there. People want to come to Atlanta. Maybe even Hamas. Did we start that? I don't know. Well, let's end here quickly. Most disappointing team in 2024. Who's killing you, Mo? Who's just saying, like, come on, guys. What are we doing here?
My Philadelphia Union.
It's tough.
It's just been... And it's hard to pinpoint what... I mean, some of the goals have been self-inflicted. Some of the issues have been self-inflicted. But, you know, for so long, their superpower was playing at home. Okay, you drop a point on the road here. It's like, we'll run it back at home. Like, no one can touch us at home. And that has been pulled out from under them. That rug has been pulled out from under them. And so it just seems to be a team right now that's, I don't want to say lost, but so far from the image that we have in our head of what to expect from when we watch Philadelphia Union play. And so that, yeah, to me, they've been the most disappointing because I had high expectations. They ran it back in terms of bringing back damn near most of their roster. Obviously, you lose a couple of players. Carranza leaves now as well. That's a big loss for them. So finding a way to replace him will be important. But I didn't see this coming. Definitely didn't see this coming. Did I think there might be a slight drop off? Yeah, but yeah. I still thought, okay, they're in playoff. They'll be in a playoff spot. That's a guarantee. There's no question in my mind about that. They'll be flirting with maybe even a home playoff spot, a home playoff game. But to be second bottom in the East, like, I don't even know what the number is now of how many games that they've gone without a win. I'm at a loss for words. That one's hard for me to digest and really process, if I'm being honest.
All the magic just seemed to melt away from this team. They have one win since the beginning of April. And I don't even want to count the number of games that are here, but it's at least 17 or 18.
Yeah.
So everything that made the Philadelphia Union just dominant in both boxes, putting you under pressure and you make the mistakes, not us. All that seems like ancient history because, you know, look, recency bias in this game is very powerful. Now, and that's for fans, and that's, I'm sure, for players and coaches as well. Like, once you get in a rut, it's hard to pull yourself out. And right now, Philadelphia Union are deep, deep, deep in that rut. My most disappointing, man, there's a bunch of disappointment in the league this year. I'm just going to always go back to the Chicago Fire. Like, this is a market, and this is a team that should be better than it is. It's not because I expected a ton of the Fire this year. It's because we just don't ever have much of a reason to expect much from the Fire. So yeah, until that changes, they're going to be on my list because it's freaking Chicago. It's Soldier Field. It's one of the like iconic clubs of the past. It's an owner in Joe Mansueto that clearly will spend money and invest to try to make his team as good as he can make them. And they just still are sitting at the bottom of the table. All right, before we go, man, national team, Jurgen Klopp says, thanks, but no thanks. Who should we be hollering at? Give me a profile in your mind. Or in your heart, or a combination of the two.
A profile? Okay. This is going to sound similar to what I was saying for Atlanta, but someone who's won, who's shown that. So first of all, I don't, and this is no slight to anybody who is me maybe being listed as a candidate, but I don't want this to be experimental, right? 2026 is around the corner for us now. And who knows when we're going to get another chance like that. And we keep deeming this group of players our golden generation, whether that's true or not, whatever. We have a lot of talent in this group of players, this pool of players. So I don't want to feel like how I just felt the other day when we bowed out of Copa America. I damn sure don't want to feel like 2018, right? I don't want to have any kind of feeling like that of regret or remorse or like we could have done more. So this manager needs to be someone who's shown that they can win consistently. If they've won at the international level, that's even better because that means that they know how to manage a tournament, which to me is priority. One of the top priorities of being able to manage a tournament. So manage a team for 5 weeks to see a progression. You don't have to be at your very best on day one, but to see that growth throughout the course of a tournament is important to me. Someone that the players will respect, but also have a little bit of maybe fear, maybe someone that keeps them on their toes and has guys checking over their shoulders because their spot in the beginning isn't safe. They have to kind of re-earn that spot and show on a consistent basis that I'm wearing this shirt for a reason. This is an honor. It's not gifted to me. I've earned the right to wear this national team jersey. So I think that part is definitely important. And then someone just who recognizes the magnitude of this moment for us in this country and us as a national team. This isn't, I don't know, Spain. This isn't France. Maybe we're, you feel like you always are in contention to win a tournament or you're always in contention to do well at a tournament. For us, this is a big deal. And I hope that this is a manager that comes in, recognizes the opportunity and the magnitude of the situation for us and can galvanize his group and just re-inspire this country. Cause I feel like there's a, I don't want to say a depressing sense to the national team right now, but there's definitely a low moment right now for the national team. And so just getting everyone excited again, going into 2026.
I mean, I agree with you across the board. I don't know why now would be the time to take a chance. Like, I just don't think you can afford to do that. And that doesn't mean that if you bring in some big name experienced manager who's won that, you know, the results are guaranteed in any way. But do I want a Jurgen Klinsmann again? No, I don't want that. But I think there's an opportunity to go out and send a message to not just the fans, but the players, to future players, to the entire country that, like, hey, soccer succeeding in 2026, showing our best, whatever that success looks like reflecting our country and all the people within and the way that they think about not just sport, but life. I think there's just a huge opportunity to change people's lives. And those people are on the team. Those people are going to be sitting on the bench. Those people are going to be watching games. I mean, I'm one of those people in 94 that, you know, fell in love with the game because I watched the U.S. go against all odds, but also because I watched Roberto Baggio ball out. Like, what if Christian Pulisic is that baller? You know, what if Gio Reyna is that guy? What if some guy we're not talking about at all is that person? Their lives are changed forever. Look at who we see talking about the game on these big networks around Copa America. Look at you. Look at the opportunity that came from the World Cup for you. I mean, this is just, it's once in a lifetime, and I would be hesitant to give that opportunity to somebody who is doing it for the first time in their lifetime, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think gambling is a good way to put it. And to your point, it's not a guarantee, but I want us to be put in the best situation possible. I want from when we look back on it, that we all kind of feel like, look, we had the best pieces in place. And maybe there's a team out there that's better than us. That's a very clear reality.
And let it fall where it may, you know?
But I just want us to be given the best chance possible to succeed in 2026.
All right. We will see. 2026 will come very, very soon. But sooner than that, MLS Cup rematch. Crew, LAFC, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. You can listen to Keith and Mo give you the play-by-play and all the color on that one. And then we'll hit you with the MLS wrap-up right after for all the highlights. Mo, thank you so much for giving me your time, man. I know you've got a limited amount, so I appreciate you.
No worries, my man. This was fun. Appreciate you.
All right, let's take a listen. DeAndre Yedlin on a big match in Cincinnati this weekend. A big welcome to DeAndre Yedlin joining us on Extra Time. DeAndre, what's up, man? How you doing?
Nothing much. Doing pretty well. Just finished training. So, just resting up now.
So it's a good day in Cincinnati, I'm sure. It's a good time every time you look at the Supporters Shield standings now, huh? Are those in the facility anywhere? Do you guys see those every day?
We do. We don't see the Supporters Shield standings. We see the Eastern Conference standings. It's kind of just – it's on a big board right when we walk out to training. So it's nice to finally be in the first spot for what seemed like a long time trailing in the second.
How often do you guys talk about that? I mean, is it actually spoken about in terms of, hey, we're trying to win this thing, we need points, we're watching Miami's results, or is it just out of sight, out of mind?
Not really. It's pretty out of sight, out of mind. We just try to take it a game at a time. I mean, I think obviously you ask any player and they're going to be checking on scores and checking on results. But at the end of the day, as a club, I think that's, you know, one thing that I've noticed is it's just heads down, one game at a time. And, you know, when one finishes, it's on to the next.
One game at a time, but come on, man. You guys put a hurting on Miami at home. That had to feel good.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it feels good because the team got a good win. I thought it was a good performance. And, you know, we'd had, even though we'd won previously, I think it was the last two games, we hadn't had the best performance. So I think that was the main thing, was just to get that confidence back and knowing that, you know, we can perform well as a team, as well as obviously get the win. I honestly hated that. It was against Drake, you know, who I know, you know, many people know is, you know, one of my best friends, if not my best friend, probably in soccer. So, it sucked that it was against him, and he actually stayed over, that like the night of the game, not the night of the game, but the night after the game. And then, yeah, the next night, cause they had a little break. So, yeah, it was.
is that an awkward moment at the breakfast table? Like,
it was a little bit awkward, but we got some other stuff going on that, you know, kind of killed that conversation. So we're actually both, we co-wrote a children's book that will be coming out soon. So, you know, we just talked a lot about that and kind of how we want to move forward with that. So
what's the book about?
It's basically about, it's about a little kid, and he grows up in the nature, and he ends up moving to the big city because of a move that his dad has to make with a job. And he goes through a lot of adversity because he's not used to the city. He's not used to the concrete and all the people and, you know, all the flashing lights and the bright lights and all that sort of stuff. And as he goes on through the book, you know, he starts to become kind of aware of his surroundings, more aware of himself, and realizes that he himself is nature. So really no matter where, that's the message through the book, is no matter where you are, you know, wherever you are is at home. And it's fitting for me and Drake, because he grew up in Sacramento, he grew up hiking and doing a lot of stuff outdoors. I grew up in Seattle, so I grew up hiking and doing a lot of stuff outdoors. So we both you know, have a big love for nature, and think that, you know, it's important to, you know, show that to especially kids, but, you know, ultimately everybody.
6 and 3-year-old here in my house. We love reading. So when that comes out, make sure.
I'll make sure I'll get you a copy.
Yeah. Sure. We'll put it out there. So
I appreciate that.
Tell me about that relationship with Drake. Where does that come from?
So when I first got to Miami, I think he was a third goalkeeper, and, young kid, he, you know, I was really in a really real spiritual phase at that point, still am, but, you know, super spiritual phase, doing a lot of meditation, doing yoga. And I was asking just kind of like around the club, does anybody do this sort of stuff? And everybody who I asked pointed like, hey, you got to talk to Drake. You got to talk to Drake. You got to talk to Drake. Every single person I asked. So ended up, you know, kind of gaining more of a relationship with him. And, you know, we found that we had a lot in common. We both grew up on the West Coast. So a lot of the restaurants we went to as kids and that sort of stuff, you know, was similar. Our wives, well, his wife now, it was girlfriend at the time, but our wives ended up meeting. They became best friends as well. So that helped the dynamic.
Crucial connection.
Crucial, right, very crucial. Yeah, we lived probably 4 minutes apart from each other. So it made it easy to, you know, kind of spend time with each other every day. But just his values, just, you know, the way he thinks is so similar to me. And for me, it's like a little brother. You know, I think he kind of went through a lot of adversity on the soccer field, you know, coming up from the third goalkeeper, working his way up to the first, and now, you know, being a lock-in starter for that team. So, you know, I just being able to see that process in him and being able to see how professional he's been through that process, you know, it obviously makes me proud, but it's just, those are the kind of people you want to be around, you know, the kind of people that, you know, no matter what they go through, they're still staying professional and got a good shoulder on their heads.
there's on the field and off the field. I mean, obviously off the field is clear. You guys are going to be boys for life. It seems like on the field, when you put up six goals, was there ever a point where you're like, I don't, should I be celebrating here?
Yeah. To be
like,
honest, after the third one, I kind of took it easy. Just walked to the side and got some water. Cause it was a little bit hot, but, yeah, it's a, you know, it's obviously never nice seeing your friend go through that, but it's obviously nice from this side, you know, putting in that kind of performance. And, you know, big credit to the whole team. You know, everybody did amazing. So, like I said, that's in the past now. We're on to the next game, and, you know, we know that, you know, we don't get a result, you know, this next game, that game means nothing. So
Charlotte coming up here this weekend for Cincinnati, 48 points from 22 games, sitting atop the Shield race right now. You arrive, you meet Pat, you get into the group and integrate. From a soccer perspective, what did you see once you got your feet wet?
Just guys that have a lot of freedom. I think that's what Pat is so good at. He doesn't, you know, force you to play a way that, you know, you're not, that doesn't fit to your strengths. You know, I think, you know, you see, especially early in the year with Luca, when he was playing on the left side, you know, Pat's allowing him to dribble and take guys on 1v1 and that sort of thing, stay a little bit higher. You know, obviously with me, I'm not that kind of player. I'm not the kind of player who's going to be doing scissors and taking people on 1v1. And, you know, for me, it's more try to run and get in behind, maybe get the ball deeper, you know, a little, just play a little bit more passes. So, you know, everybody, he really allows everybody to play to their strengths, which I think, you know, sometimes you don't find in soccer. Sometimes you're expected to come in and fit to a certain system, because that's the system the coach wants to play. And that's the way the coach, you know, wants to play, rather than, you know, finding what the strengths of each of your players are and seeing how, you know, you can best mold, you know, what the coach wants and the strengths of the player. So it's a huge credit to Pat. He's a great, great manager, especially a great man manager. You know, it's very personal guy, the whole coaching staff, very easy to talk to. You know, if us as players have other ideas that we see on the field, you know, he's not stubborn about, you know, no, this is the way we're going to do things. He openly listens and has a conversation about it, which I think is important, because, you know, it allows everybody to feel kind of like they're a leader and, you know, voice their opinion.
Center back, huh? Everybody's got to put in a shift right now.
That's right. That's right. That's how it works. That's how it works.
Did you feel a little bit cursed as a team? I mean, it just felt like one after another. And obviously, personal side, you don't want guys to ever be injured, but you have to keep moving along. It felt like, man, the deck is just stacked at that position.
Yeah, it was pretty tough, you know, especially because, you know, both, I was very close to both Matt and Nick. So to see both of them go down like that so close together is, not a great feeling. And on top of that, that's my coffee group on game day. So I lost my coffee group, unfortunately, but, you know, I know they'll be back stronger. They're both really positive guys. They're both guys that are extremely professional. So, you know, no worries about them getting back. You know, Nick's been around the training ground quite a bit, and, you know, he's the same guy, very smiley, making jokes, you know, keeping the positivity level up, which I think is important to any team.
Luca Orsano. He started on the left, but now he's moved over to the right a little bit.
Yeah,
he likes to come inside on that left foot. It's not just the dribble, it's the shot from distance. It just feels like the levels for him, like he's going up a ladder right now.
Yeah, no, he's definitely finding incredible form, which is good for us. You know, he's not a player that I'd like to play against. So we're lucky that we have him. On our team. And then obviously you add Lucho into that with his, you know, with his skill and his cleverness. And it's a pretty difficult attack to stop with those two, you know, running at you.
I don't want to say two diminutive Argentines are the same, and this might be complete sacrilege, DeAndre. Like, the soccer gods might strike me down, smoke me right now. Can you compare Lucho and Messi?
I mean, I think, you know, at the end of the day, like, I think what people always say is, you know, Messi's done it in Spain and in the World Cups and on a high level, but just being with Lucho, you know, I'm not a type of player that likes to compare players. I think everybody, you know, in their own is, you know, they're obviously their own player, but I can tell you, playing with Lucho, he does things that I haven't seen anybody else do. And that's, you know, that's including training with Messi. You know, he's an incredible player. And, you know, again, what I really respect about Lucho is off the field. He speaks very good English. So he's very personable as well. He gets in on the banter with, you know, with the guys, even in English.
Very good English, huh?
Very good English.
We might be making some phone calls.
Yeah, yeah.
This man. No,
He speaks very good English. You know, he leads by example with his play. You know, I think he's the kind of player that, you know, you're in a little bit of a rut. You just get him the ball, and he's going to make something happen, as he's shown, you know, numerous amount of times. So, again, we're incredibly fortunate to have him as well.
It feels like his balance and his strength,
yeah,
are things that maybe when you watch a game are hard to really pin down.
Yeah,
but it's like a combination of footwork, and then I see people hit him and try to knock him off his pass. It just doesn't happen. How would you defend him? How do you defend him in training?
It's tough because you can't – honestly, how I would defend him if I was going against him is try to get him space and try to get the ball out of his feet. Whether he makes a pass somewhere else, just get the ball out of his feet. I think when he has the ball at his feet, it's really dangerous. And I think, you know, a lot of people try to get super tight to him and be aggressive with him. But like you said, he's incredibly strong as well. He's low to the ground, obviously, as we all know. So, you know, he always seems to get out of that sort of stuff. So – I mean, for me, that's why he's a former, you know, MVP, and obviously in the MVP race this year. You know, it's not a good answer for how to defend him. You know,
you don't want to give that away, though.
No, you don't want to give it away. Yeah. But really, even when I was with Miami, it's really not a good answer for how to defend him. He just is one of those players where, you know, maybe hope he has a off day, or, you know, that's really it.
Minimize the damage.
Exactly.
That's how people think about Messi.
Exactly. Same thing. Yeah, same thing.
You got that opportunity. And many people want that opportunity to play with him when you're maybe not even older.
Right.
I was going to say when your career is past, but maybe now, because I'm sure people like me and people in your life are asking you, what will you tell people about the experience of playing with Lionel Messi?
I mean, just, you know, that I was able to play with the best player to ever play the game. You know, I obviously it's a blessing. It's incredible to be able to see you know, what he does on the field. I think more impressive, as I stated a lot of times before, is what he does off the field and how professional he is. I take big notice of a lot of those details because, you know, I think certain players are just gifted with some things. And I think he's one of those players that was honestly just gifted with an unbelievable gift. But I think that, you know, still off the field, you can be a, I don't want to say a bad person, but, you know, you cannot be the best person. And, you know, for me, from my experiences with him, he's always been a great person. And I think the way he carries himself with, you know, how much fame he has, how great of a player he is incredible. And it's an example for all of us, you know, that strive to be great. You know, you can be great and also be a good person. So, yeah, I know I've said that a lot of times before, but, you know, it's credit to him. And yeah, I just love the way that he carries himself.
Yeah, worth bearing repeating for all of us, honestly. I mean, you don't have to be famous. You don't have to be a rock star to still make that a priority in your life. And I thought there was an interesting quote that you had in the piece on FCCincinnati.com that was about, like, look, when I was young and single, maybe Miami would have been this place that was perfect for me. But Cincinnati has turned out to be that place. I wonder how much you expect. Did you expect to be traded? Was that on your radar, or that kind of just popped up? And you
it was floating around for a bit, but there was nothing kind of concrete. So it was like a kind of a slow buildup. So it wasn't too much of a surprise when it happened. But coming to Cincinnati, I didn't really know what to expect of the city. I had only previously been here for national team games and games that I'd played against FC Cincinnati, obviously, and we just stay downtown. So it's not like we get to see the city that much. And Cincinnati, you know, for me is a city where, you know, there's a lot of really cool stuff going on the outskirts of the city, you know, in tiny little pockets of different neighborhoods. So, you know, being able to be here and experience, you know, those little pockets and, you know, as I stated in that article, just how kid friendly and family friendly the city is was really eye opening. Coming from Seattle, it's a similar type of vibe where you know, it's very family friendly, it's very safe, very kid friendly. There was that little piece that felt like, you know, I'm at home, you know. you know, obviously the there's nature everywhere, but the types of trees over here and the types of, you know, grass and, you know, it just reminded me of home, the river, like, you know, the rivers and, you know, all that sort of stuff. It reminded me a lot of home. So, you know, as I got to know it and know the city more and more, you know, it kind of made me fall more and more in love with it. And then, you know, obviously we got our place and, you know, we're settled now and, you know, the family's moved up and, as I stated, obviously the kids are loving it. There's so much for kids to do, so much activities for kids to do. You know, we got a yard now, which we didn't really have in Florida.
Underrated perk, man.
Yeah,
underrated
it really perk. Is. It really is. Especially as my daughter gets, she's almost three now. So she's, you know, really running everywhere and needs to get her energy out. So that's been a huge plus. And yeah, just the way the club, you know, puts an emphasis on taking care of families. I'm a kind of guy that, you know, I think really with anybody, you know, if your family's happy, you're pretty much going to be happy. So it's so far it's been a really, really, really great experience.
I got to take you back a little bit. And just a couple more for you. I know you got off track.
Yeah, no problem.
A young guy comes to you while mulling a move to Europe because you have all these experiences that you can reference back on of like, hey, this is what makes me happy, fulfilled, able to focus on the field, but feel fulfilled everywhere else in my life.
Yeah.
If a young guy comes to you and says, I want to move to Europe, I've got some options. Mm-hmm. What would you tell them about what it's like, what that move for a young American might be like, what they will expect, like what kind of club that they should go to? Like, what do you look out for?
So soccer wise, what I would say is go anywhere you can play. That's for me, for the young players, that's the most important thing. Go where you're going to play. You know, I think that was a big struggle for me going straight to Tottenham was, you know, I didn't play. And that caused, I think, some, I don't want to say off-field problems. I didn't really have off-field problems, but, you know, some put me in circumstances that I wasn't in before. When I started playing again, then those problems, you know, magically sort of disappear. Mm-hmm. So go somewhere where you can play. I think you're always going to be happier when you're playing. But you know, off the field, like for me off the field, that's, you know, 75% of it. And I think that's the thing that a lot of fans don't realize is, you know, you're training for 2.5 hours a day, probably or at the facility for 2.5 hours a day. The rest of the time you're, you know, in whatever city you're in or, you know, in a different country. I was fortunate to go to a country that I spoke the language, you know, but you know, imagine you're going to a complete separate country where you have to learn the language and, you know, you're living on your own. I had never been on my own. I never lived on my own before besides college, but I'm not going to really count that. So it was tough. It was really, really tough. You got to figure out stuff early. And yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, I know a lot of people have this dream of, you know, going to Europe and playing in Europe and, you know, winning Champions League and all of this sort of stuff. But I think timing is really important. You know, I wouldn't just say go whenever you can go, you know, go whenever you have, when you can go and you're going to go to this team, but you're going to sit on the bench. I don't think that's maybe for some people, but personally, for my personal standpoint, you know, that would be pretty difficult for me. So yeah, that would be the first thing I'd say is just go where you're going to play, if you're going to play. And secondly, just realize that, you know, it's a different culture over there. It's a different life over there. And yeah, that's just how it is.
What's the different soccer culture? Like what's the thing you're like, oh, hey, this is not the same.
I think where you're going into it, where I think it's a lot more pressure, one. And I think a big part of that is promotion, relegation, especially with, you know, I've had that experience firsthand of, you know, being promoted and, well, not being relegated, but, you know, being in a relegation battle. And that's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure because there's a lot of money involved in that. You know, there's a lot of pride involved with that, with fans and that sort of thing. Secondly, you know, you're under a microscope. It's the number one sport in probably wherever you go in Europe. So people know you. People are going to know you everywhere you go. You know, you can't do things there that you could get away with here. So, you know, you almost have to be on your, I don't say on your toes, but, you know, watching your back pretty much at all times. Cause, you know, you're, whether you like it or not, you're a target, to fans, to opposing fans, to media, you're a target. You have a target on your back. So those are the two main differences as far as the culture goes.
When you got back, what did you notice about MLS? Because you saw it in, you know, it's almost like not a full decade, but nearly a decade difference of and then back.
It's grown so much. It's grown so much from the level of the talent to the facilities. I mean, now the fact that, you know, pretty much every team has a training facility and a very nice one at that stadium, all the soccer specific stadiums now. You know, it's incredible the types of players that they're attracting to the league now. It's incredible. I was really happy to see that. I was really happy to see that. You know, and it's, you know, I think you look at, you know, other leagues around the world that are trying to, you know, kind of have this growth and become a top league in the world. And nobody, I don't think, is really growing at the rate and consistency that MLS is. So it's credit to the people that are running the league. I think they're doing a good job. There's still some other things I think that could be added, but I'll say that for another time. And I think it's been going pretty well.
Let me end you on a positive. There's too much negativity for me around the national team. I'm like backed out of that in large part. But yeah. I want to hear from your perspective on 2026. Mm. What gets you excited about this group? What makes you believe that they can do something special?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's obviously, like you said, there's a lot of chatter around this group. I've been around this group a lot, and you know, I know the talent that this group has. So just that fact, just seeing the talent this group has, and the drive and the commitment that this group has, it gets me really excited. You know, I think, yeah, there is a lot of negativity, and sometimes that can blind people to, you know, what you have in front of you, but it's a really special group. It's a really, really special group. And, you know, I think that they're going to go on to do really great things. So that's what gets me excited.
2 years down the line, I'm looking forward to getting my hands on X Marks the Spot.
Yes.
Andre Yedlin, yes. Drake Callender, putting out children's books, doing every last thing you can do. Soccer, authors.
Yeah, right.
What's next? TBD. DeAndre, thank you so much for your time, man.
I appreciate you. Appreciate it.
All right. Big thanks to DeAndre and Mo for stopping by on this Thursday. It's been a wonderful return to the ETR airwaves for me. Back from vacation. We hope Mo gets the rest that he needs. And, of course, all of you enjoy the weekend, whether you're in stadium or out. Games on Saturday on MLS Season Pass, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time is MLS Countdown. I'm juiced to be back on the airwaves there. And then you can watch all the games plus MLS 360. And then we'll wrap it all up on, you guessed it, wrap up at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Enjoy the games. Enjoy MLS Cup rematch. Enjoy all the soccer, folks. We'll see you on Monday. Adios.